Good afternoon, and welcome to KVSC's News Watch feature on 88.1 FM. I'm Joe McMullen. Joining us today is Maria Flores. She is a program analyst for the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the United States Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity.
And you are visiting Central Minnesota. St. Cloud State is one of a few stops and opportunities that you are reaching out on behalf of the EEOC into communities. Can you tell me a bit about, first off, your background? It's my understanding you've been working for a number of years within the EEOC.
You're so kind. We don't want to give away my age, but certainly I've been with the EEOC coming up on 22 years this particular month. Started out as a bilingual investigator. Turns out I have no fear of public speaking, which leads me to this second avenue at the EEOC, our education and outreach, getting information to the hands of the public about what their civil rights are in terms of employment discrimination.
And you actually started in Milwaukee, and you were the first bilingual EEOC officer with the Milwaukee division, correct?
Correct. I was the first person hired as a Spanish-speaking bilingual investigator.
And so I'll come to this question maybe a bit later, but we're going to talk about how your career path has changed in these years and what kind of maybe changes you've seen successfully happen, noting you know, the 20-plus year career path you've had with the EEOC. Can you talk a bit about what a program analyst does with the EEOC?
Actually, I don't know where that analyst title comes from. I like to refer to myself as a program manager because I manage various outreach programs. It could be this free public service, get the information to the hands of the public. It could also be our fee-based programs where we have training seminars, where employer representatives come to get information, best practices. We also have things like webinars. Certainly, we have a technical assistance aspect, which is employers can call me at any time. That's supervisor, manager, human resource director. They have an EEO question. They're not quite sure how to proceed. We'll talk at length on the phone. I'll break it down for them what the law has to say, talk about some best practices, give them links to some important resources. So it's very broad.
So Maria, can we, let's first try to dispel some fears or trepidation that people have when they hear EEOC and it's a U.S. agency. It's in, you know, in my opinion, it's an advocacy role on behalf of both the employee and the employer. But what kind of fears can you talk about when you hear those big letters? And I know from a radio point of view, we have radio stations do report hiring practices, as many, you know, federal and state employers have to do. But could you discuss some of the fears that may come along with being working for an agency such as
this?
Sure.
Certainly in terms of employers, they may think of us as a ninja SWAT team, and we're going to bust down the door and come in and do an investigation. That's not the case. Usually we need a charge of discrimination. That's our key to the door to allow us to ask for information, documentation, on-site investigations. And we work in a neutral fact-finding capacity. We're going to collect information, analyze it, and make decisions as to whether or not violations have occurred. So for employers, we want them to be aware that we're here to provide proactive education to eradicate discrimination. And for workers, sometimes the fear is going to the federal government to bring a complaint. These may be individuals who may be limited English proficient, which is why we have bilingual staff, making sure that we in ways can provide, you know, culturally competent services. But also some people may be coming from countries where they're fearful of their own governments. We want to make sure that they understand that our doors are open and that they have a right to exercise their civil rights by bringing an employment discrimination complaint without fear of retaliation, which is prohibited.
Our guest today is Maria Flores. She's a program analyst with the EEOC, and she's visiting Central Minnesota and discussing a lot of things with both employees, employers, and reaching out to other public institutions, including St. Cloud State University. Well, in your career, you developed something called the E-Race Initiative on race and discrimination. Could you just discuss what that initiative was and is?
Certainly. This was established under a previous chair, and unfortunately, we still have these ongoing issues about race, color, national origin discrimination in the workplace. And at that time, the E-Race Initiative was like a five-year plan to address these issues that we see in the workplace. It involved a lot of new type of literature they were providing. There was an updated release of our guidance on race discrimination in the workplace. And certainly, when we're out there providing training or free public presentations, we want to make sure that the public is educated about, unfortunately, some of these ongoing issues involving race discrimination.
You also, noting your background, did some bilingual PSAs, which we have a Spanish program on KVSC that's in bilingual. It's primarily music, but also announcements. And so I know those were about workers, youth workers.
Correct.
And is that was that something that you did for a region? Because I don't, maybe we can stop and pause on that for a moment. I don't know if many Minnesotans or central Minnesotans know that there are migrant families who come and work in the Midwest. And it's not just something you may see in the Southwest United States or in the Southeast in Florida. Could you tell me a bit about the messaging that you developed?
Sure, certainly. This was kind of almost hand in hand with our other initiative, which is Youth at Work, to educate young workers about what their rights are. And a lot of times you may see young people working in, let's say, in the agricultural industry as migrant workers all across the United States, whether it's Haitians in Florida or Latinos in the Southwest, or let's say Hmong individuals working here in the Midwest. And so we wanted to get the message out to these young people, many of them who may be Spanish-speaking individuals, about what their rights are. And so the EEOC was able to bring together a small task force, a committee, which included myself, to develop some public service announcements. We ended up producing some radio segments, both in English and in Spanish, and distributing this to various advocacy group or service providers so that young people and the general public can learn more about what employment discrimination is.
Did you have, in your career path, investigate some claims on behalf of, let's say, youth farm workers or Hmong workers in our part of the country, noting that Minneapolis-St. Paul is one of the largest Hmong populations, I think, believe in the United States, actually?
I haven't investigated any involving youth farm workers, but certainly I've had a number of high-profile cases involving immigrant workers. Again, a lot of them Latino workers, even here in the Midwest, which was highlighted in a PBS special just a couple of months ago, Rape in the Fields.
In the front line. Yeah.
Right, correct. Talking about sexual assault in the workplace all across the United States, focusing on one case here in the Midwest that was under our Milwaukee office, the DeCoster Farms case. Very sad case where you had immigrant women who were victims of sexual violence, including assault in the workplace. And we were able to secure over $1 million in remedy for these women.
That's a great success story to hear that outcome. Because often you don't know where those cases are, how far they go. Often mainstream media does not provide a lot of attention to those stories.
And then, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, but it's important that people understand that our process is confidential. Until a lawsuit is filed, we're not able to confirm or deny the existence of any matters pending before the commission. That's my party line. And so what happens, sometimes we are able to secure a settlement agreement or a mediation agreement without going through the lawsuit stage, in which case the public may not be aware of that. So even though you may not see a big high-profile, let's say, a banner notice in the news about what we're doing, trust me, we are working quietly, diligently to make sure that people's rights are preserved.
There's an influx of immigrant population now into central Minnesota for many years now, Latino, and in fact, many businesses are springing up in central Minnesota, being run and operated in small communities and St. Cloud itself nearby. And also, I would say in the last 8 years, lots of Somali immigrants, well over 10,000 Somali immigrants in the St. Cloud area alone. And Minneapolis, of course, has a lot of East African immigrants from several countries. Could you talk to any advice to someone who might be working in a situation that they're uncomfortable? What are their paths of what they can do to report something if they're in a work environment that they feel is harassment, abusive, you know, workers' rights? Because I know that many of the Somali immigrants, they may work within hard industry or meat packing and processing. Same thing for some Latino, Latina. If they hear this interview, what would some advice be to how to go about seeking change?
Certainly. And there are many issues that an immigrant worker may encounter in the workplace. One may be harassment due to their racial background, their ethnicity, or their religion, let's say. Somali workers, often Muslim workers. And so workers need to be aware of several issues they may face. The harassment I mentioned, maybe potentially some illegal speak English only rules, which could violate some of our discrimination laws. There may also be a requirement that the employer needs to provide the worker an accommodation for their religious beliefs or practices. And so when individuals find themselves in some of these harassment issues, speak English only cases, not being given a religious accommodation, they need to be sure to bring that complaint to the appropriate party within their organization, a supervisor, manager, preferably human resources. These are individuals educated in EEO. They want an opportunity to correct these issues in-house before what? Before the person comes to the EEOC. But certainly, a worker who feels they're victim of discrimination should not wait for the internal process to completely finish because there's a timeline with which to file a charge with their agency. Usually 180 days to 300 days, depending on what state they're located. So it always behooves the worker to contact as soon as possible.
So the 6 months limit from an incident to when it should be noted with the EEOC?
They need to file the charge within 180 days or 300 days after the last date of the discrimination. Our services are free. You don't need an attorney. So again, individuals, anytime they feel that something's not quite right, pick up the phone. We're a phone call away. Send us an email, and we can help them understand our process. If necessary, we will draft a charge of discrimination for them and get the process rolling.
Our guest today is Maria Flores. She's a program analyst with the U.S. EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I think in St. Cloud, I've seen and watched some, I think, really growth within the business community and the immigrant community. Reading the St. Cloud Times, a local newspaper, there's been a series of articles, a plant in St. Cloud called Electrolux that makes refrigerators and appliances. They went from an immigrant workforce with conflict to resolution. And I believe it involved religious breaks as necessary, maybe some food breaks, things of that nature, and recognizing fasting periods for Muslim followers. So it's interesting to watch from my perspective of how that story has come full circle in maybe a 5-year period.
Well, certainly employers can obviously reap the benefits of employing an immigrant workforce. And when they have these workers working for them, it is in their best interest to, one, obey the laws, correct, but two, to make themselves aware of some of these cultural or religious differences. And if they can anticipate those needs, to make the work environment better for those individuals, like providing the religious accommodation, for example. It could be other things like maybe putting signage that's bilingual. Put it in English and the language of your limited English proficient workers who are working there. Providing, let's say, appropriate interpreters so that the interpreters are able to communicate to these workers what the company's policies and procedures are so that everyone is on the same page.
Yeah, it's a community. St. Cloud is an immigrant community from its base of 150 years ago with a new immigrant population coming in. So there's always, maybe you can speak better to that, but my observation is a time of recognition of different cultures being acceptable in your community. And I know I've seen this in other communities. Rochester, Minnesota, I think, has also learned and how to grow with your immigrant base.
Certainly, I've seen that in my experience at the EEOC, not just within, let's say, the Midwest, but all across the United States. Immigrant workers are in every part. I was surprised to see a large Latino population. Where was I? In Western North Dakota. I was surprised by that. You see, again, like Haitian workers in Florida. I have Bosnian workers in Iowa. There's a wide variety of immigrant workers all across the United States. And again, always in the best interest of the employers to try to anticipate the needs of these workers, making sure they comply with these EEO laws.
Well, you're here at St. Cloud State, and you had presented last evening at the brand new Integrated Science, Engineering, and Laboratory Facility. We call it iSelf. It's a gorgeous new building we're very proud of. Tell me about the presentation last night at St. Cloud State University.
Last night, I focused on national origin and immigrant worker issues. And for the EEOC, dealing with these populations is part of our 6-point national strategic enforcement plan. So one of our points is we want to protect immigrant, migrant, and other vulnerable workers. These are individuals who, because of, let's say, language barriers, may not be aware of what their civil rights are here in the United States. These are individuals who may be facing forms of discrimination like harassment, unequal pay, job segregation, for example. And we do a lot of things to make sure that we can reach out to these groups. So, for example, all across the United States, including Chicago District, which I represent, we've entered into agreements with the Mexican Consulate, for example, cross-training their staff so that they can be aware of our laws, participating in public venues like the Labor Rights Week, which happened about last week of August or so, making sure that we're on the radio station, that we're at an information booth, that we're available at the consulate office to hear potential complaints. Again, getting information to the hands of the public, very critical so that people can exercise their rights with our agency.
I'm going to come back to a question I asked you probably prematurely in the beginning of our conversation. You've been involved with the EEOC as part of your career path since 1991. can you talk about some of the change? And often, maybe you know, people get frustrated because of policy, or immigrants get policy, or those. It's not just even immigrants. We happen to be focused on immigrants right now. We're going to talk about a lot of the other areas that the EEOC assists workforce with. Can you talk about, just in maybe a broad stroke or from a high point of view, some of the changes that you really have seen that are positive? Because often your job involves dealing with a lot of negative.
Correct. And certainly being at this agency, you see a lot of the ugly side of employment discrimination. On the other hand, though, as our demographics change, as workplace issues change, our law changes and the way that courts interpret things changes. So, for example, the Americans with Disabilities Act, very important to protect the rights of individuals with disabilities. Unfortunately, there have been a number of Supreme Court decisions that made it very difficult for people to establish that they are a person disabled under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Now we lead later on with the amendments to the Americans with Disabilities Act, which broadens the coverage. So now you have more people who are protected under that law, meaning more individuals who are likely entitled, let's say, to reasonable accommodation in the workplace to do the main or essential functions of their job. Additionally, you have other forms of discrimination that have reared their ugly head, things like genetic information discrimination, leading to the establishment of a new law called GINA.
You know, I was reading about some information, and the GINA acronym, could you describe what that is? And then I am actually mystified what the genetic discrimination can be. Could you talk about
Certainly.
That?
Certainly. GINA stands for Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. And this law prohibits employers from collecting genetic information and using that genetic information. Why? Well, certainly it may be that the person may have a genetic marker to show they're predisposed to get a certain condition later on down the road, but they don't have it now. So it has nothing to do with their present ability to do the job.
So if in my family there's a history of heart disease or a type of cancer, that should not be held against me as an employee for being part of being hired or being currently still employed because of concern of health care needs down the road.
Correct. First of all, the employer shouldn't be trolling for that information. And second of all, not using that information in an employment decision.
It's my understanding if, you know, God forbid I had a form of cancer and I needed treatment, the EEOC could protect me if my employer also wanted to let me go.
Absolutely. And certainly with respect, again, with the Amendments Act to the Americans with Disabilities Act, we broaden the scope of what can constitute a disability. This could include individuals with cancer. And certainly we understand that there may be ebbs and flows with regards to someone having cancer. When it's active, when it impacts your major life activities, sleeping, eating, breathing, walking, communicating, and the like, you may be a person with a disability. And again, you may be entitled to accommodations. Maybe you need to have some flexible leave because you need to take off work early to go get chemotherapy or to have a medical appointment. Those may be ways that we could protect the individual who has cancer in terms of their employment rights.
And maybe I'm just, I have too much of a Pollyanna view on the world at times, but it's, I would imagine the reason why the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act exists and why protections for those who maybe get diagnosed with a life-changing illness is because there's been problems in the past.
There have been problems in the past, and in fact, if I'm not mistaken, one of our keynote cases involving GINA, I believe occurred right here in the state of Minnesota, where you had an employer who was requiring workers who had worker comp claims to undergo some testing. Turns out a lot of blood was drawn from them. Turns out one of the workers mentioned it to the spouse who happened to be an occupational nurse who was concerned about, my, that's a lot of blood that they're drawing from you. What do they need that for? Turns out that they were doing some type of testing on the blood of the workers to see if they were predisposed for certain conditions. And again, as you pointed out, then we're fearful that what if the employer acts on that information? I don't want to employ that person because I foresee them having a disability. They're going to cost me a lot in terms of insurance, or they're going to be attendance problems when they don't know for a fact that that's going to be the issue.
It sounds like you, Maria, just described like a movie plot to me, actually. But it's unfortunate that's what has happened. And it's nice to have the EEOC has been aware of that and has made change to protect the workers' rights.
Correct. And these things continue on in terms, again, the way that we adapt to the way the workforce is changing. For example, we have newer guidance on how our laws may protect victims of domestic violence, stalking, and sexual assault.
Could you elaborate on that, please?
Certainly. It may be a situation, for example, let's say an employer will allow a man to take off work because he was arrested for drunk driving. He has a court appearance. A woman at the same company wants to take off because she needs to obtain a restraining order. Well, maybe the employer does not give the female the time off because he feels that that's some personal family drama. And he's worried about women bringing that type of drama into the workplace. Well, now you've had a difference in treatment in terms of gender discrimination, for example. Or maybe you may have a woman who's been a victim of domestic violence and has suffered from clinical depression. And she may need time off of work to go see a psychiatrist. Maybe the employer doesn't want to provide the woman that type of time off, but will allow someone else the time off to tend to a medical issue. So the female may be a victim of gender discrimination and may be, have been denied an accommodation because she has a disability, clinical depression.
Our guest is Maria Flores with the U.S. EEOC. She's on an informational tour of Central Minnesota. As we talk about all these things, of course, you've mentioned, talk to your supervisor. Talk to your human resources officer. If not, and then also look at your timeline and talk to the EEOC. How would someone talk to the EEOC? Could you share a website or a telephone number that would be a resource if someone's listening and is like, you know what, I really think I need to think about this and maybe talk to somebody, get some advice.
Absolutely. I tell people we're a phone call away. They can reach us direct at 1-800-669-4000. Also, they are able to send us an email. I believe it's info@eeoc.gov. They can also visit our website, which has enormous resources on information. On that website, www.eeoc.gov, individuals can kind of start the process to file a charge of discrimination. And if anything, there's snail mail. Send us a letter. We'll respond to that. And we also have individuals that show up at our doorstep to file a complaint of discrimination.
The number one more time is 1-800-669-4000.
Correct.
I want to ask one more question and leave the last word to you as our guest today. Another subject area is caregiving issues related to workplace discrimination. And is that related to helping take care of maybe an elderly parent? Or could you elaborate on what the EEOC policy is and how you've helped develop policy for caregiving issues?
Certainly caregiving can be very broad. And we talk about being a sandwich generation. We may be taking care of young folk. Young children, we may be taking care of older adults, we may be taking care of individuals who may have a disability. And sometimes employers may use that information, again, in a negative employment decision. Let's say I'm applying for a job and I let it slip that my husband has multiple sclerosis. Now, the employer doesn't want to hire me because the job involves a lot of travel, and they're worried that I'm going to be taken off a lot of work or I won't be able to travel overnight because I need to attend to this person who has a disability. So now I've been denied an employment opportunity because of my association with a person with a disability for whom I have a caregiving responsibility.
Well, the last word is always for our guests. We've touched on a lot of subjects today, and you are speaking and meeting with folks here at St. Cloud State University, spoke to students. I believe you're also traveling to Alexandria. Share any final thoughts for our listeners today about the EEOC and the role it is serving for the working folks.
Certainly, I want to encourage both employers and workers to reach out to the EEOC. Employers, as I tell them, don't wait until the horse leaves the barn in order to contact us. Be sure you contact us ahead of time before that issue snowballs into an EEO dilemma for you. For workers, if you have any inkling that things don't feel right, you want to reach out to the EEOC, give us a phone call. And certainly people like me in my position, program analysts all across the United States, give us a phone call. We'd be interested in coming out and providing the public with the latest information about the issues that we're seeing out there and how both, again, employers and workers can avail themselves of the resources that we have.
Well, thanks so much for making time for KVSC in your very busy schedule. And it's been a pleasure to learn more about the role of the EEOC and how it helps employees and employers in a multitude of scenarios.
Thank you so much. And we're here to serve.
Our guest has been Maria Flores, and I'm Joe McMullen for KVSC News.